Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Bye-bye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.
Another week, another moment of triumph.
We'll call it that. We'll
go
with that.
For the listeners, we had a great call earlier this week with a listener who's been with us since, I think she said 2021. She found us through the algorithm of her podcast app.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, hey, wait a minute. We're getting some like vibrational support from the ethosphere. I appreciate that.
Can you fit any more big words into that sentence?
What was the word I used last time?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It was a good one, though.
I'll be spending some big words today.
It was well placed.
I'll spend some more big words today. Don't worry about that. How's life? How's your summer going so far?
Is it summer?
Well, your pre-summer? How's your pre-summer going?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, just everything's great.
Yeah.
We've had a stretch of great weather days.
Yeah.
It's... Yeah, we're in championship track and field season.
Yeah.
So it's busy. I said that last time, but it's good. It's good stuff.
All right, good. So we just finished our two-part series on getting sick. I'm glad we're past that. I was sick of that by the end.
Yes.
I've been looking at stats on our show. We get a lot of listeners.
Oh, yeah?
We get we've had since the beginning 400,000 downloads of our show. There are some weeks, and that's just our show. When our show airs on Sean King's show, we've gotten in some weeks almost 20,000 listeners for one episode. Like, now that we got stats, we're going to start coming at y'all with what y'all want to hear.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like it. I think you did share some of that with me, but I couldn't follow it. So I was like,
I'm excited.
You'll tell me about it.
We've been doing the show just off of what we felt like talking about all this time. And so now we got some stats on y'all, Jokers.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that. So one of the things that's been in the news a lot this year is this notion of DEI for a lot of different reasons. One, we're in a presidential season where we've got kind of Trump, Biden, and it brings up a lot of ugly stuff.
Yep.
That's kind of one thing. Another thing we're seeing is the Supreme Court decision on colleges using race as a admission criteria.
It's all related.
The Fearless Fund litigation that happened earlier this month.
Yep.
Where they are not allowed to give out money to Black women business owners and founders because it is not fair. And
yeah, it's not fair.
Yeah.
We'll get into some of the stats and it's
The crazy thing about that is they are using legislation from the 1800s that was designed to protect Black folks from being lynched and whatnot.
Yep.
To now, I won't say lynch Black folks, but to certainly put them in a disadvantage
It's all hate.
Yeah. And ironically, we come from...
It's just white collar hate.
Yeah, that's a fact. Yeah, and we come from industries like financial services is not a very diverse place. And they all the firms say they want to be more diverse, and yet they're not.
Word.
Makes you wonder if they really want to be more diverse. I hate to say it. And now that you see diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging under attack, you wonder if we're going to be set back decades.
Yeah.
And so we know a lot of our listeners are diverse. We know a lot of our listeners are probably working in fields where they're being forced into the diversity conversation or the diversity roles. And yet there's a lot of us that probably feel kind of helpless to this.
For sure. So one of the issues is the fact that people don't understand what diversity, equity, or inclusion or belonging, they don't understand what it really means. So they think it's something different than what it really is. That's number one. And number two, selfishly, I'm personally impacted by it. My husband has a DEI role. He is the director of diversity, equity, and inclusion for a public school district.
Yeah.
The role didn't exist before. That is his job.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what happens when they go, hey, we got to make some budget cuts and we don't think your role is going to be needed. Like, you see it play out in different ways, but I can't say anymore because it's contract season.
Yeah, but speaking of that attack, in certain states, his job would be banned. Like, that's happening right now. We've seen Republican lawmakers create 40 anti-DEI bills, and they're targeting higher education, and they're moving towards public education. Like, for example, in Texas and Florida, conservative politicians basically created laws that say that, for example, in Texas, there's a law that took effect this month that prohibits DEI offices and hiring of staff to perform DEI duties in public higher education institutions.
Based on what?
Banned. Man.
Hate.
Oklahoma.
Why am I asking this question? We know what it's based on. It's all hate.
Oklahoma, effective immediately. The order eliminates state funding for all DEI positions, departments, activities, and trainings. Yeah. So, like, it's under attack. Like, I think this is...
It's always Florida, though.
Yeah. No, Florida. Oh, yeah. Florida's on it, too. You know, like, even that Fearless Fund, like, that litigation was in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what I'm getting at is, like, I'm sure a lot of folks feel under attack. I also think it's kind of interesting that, like, it's always Black folks in these diversity jobs. It's always Black and Latin folks, and particularly women. I kind of, like, I look at that a little funny. Like, I'm sure we know about this stuff. Don't get me wrong. But I'm saying, like, we know about other stuff, too.
Absolutely. I have mixed feelings about it as well, especially, as you mentioned, in an industry like ours, where there's already a lack of representation.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you see senior executives in our industry rise to certain levels, oftentimes it's human resources, it's in this DEI roles, or it's in something soft skill, which we need to be there too.
Oh, for sure.
But some of these opportunities are also underrepresented. If you're talking about investment banking, like, we can walk and chew gum at the same time.
Oh, for sure. For sure. So it's interesting. It's like we had a conversation this week at our firm about what makes us different. And, like, we all went around the horn and we all talked about different things that helps us to stand out. And my big thing was, like, our diversity is really, like, a big thing. Like, we are a firm that was founded by Black folks that has women and minorities and all kinds of leadership positions in our firm. And we're very different than Wall Street, but it doesn't really stop there. It allows us to understand our clients a lot better. Andrea, you used the word culturally competent.
Culturally competent, culturally relevant.
And we also help our clients to express themselves.
Yes.
And this moment of a DEI war is one of those moments where we shine in our ability to help people to express themselves.
Yeah, for sure.
And so what we're going to talk about today is, what does your money have to say about all this?
Yep.
Like, you may disagree with the legislation. You may disagree with the anti-woke movement in theory, but does your money disagree with it?
That's right. It's like we use the expression in society, put your money where your mouth is.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like, put your money where your heart is.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
Because you may be funding these very things that you're upset about.
And you don't even know.
And not even realize it.
Yeah.
You might be part of the problem. We've had a series called Is Your Money Racist? And I guess this is kind of like within that series, like, is your money racist? We're just going to talk about the ways that your money says volumes about who you are. And ways to change it.
Yep.
So why don't we start with some stats? Okay. You may have heard these before, but bear with us. Maybe you haven't heard it in a long time. Number one, investment firms owned by women and people of color manage only 1.3% of the $70 trillion in assets under management in the United States.
That's crazy.
So 98.7% of the money that is professionally managed is managed by white folks and white men. And this is despite the fact that in our nation, would you believe, Andrea, that 70% of our population is women and minorities? Because there was women in that, too. It wasn't just minorities.
Right.
Like, there's no problem with that.
This quasi-calculator I have can't even fit 70 trillion, so I can't do the math. I'm sure I can do it a different way and add some zeros, but that's tiny. 1.3%?
Yeah. Okay. In 2021, Black startups received only 1.4% of all U.S. venture funding. This is funding from venture capitalists, venture capital firms. And in 2023, that number dropped to just $582 million, which was under 1%. Like, we have been at 1.4, and now that number is cut just about in half in 2023. And some might say, well, venture funding did drop. Like, venture funding dropped by 37% last year. But for Black firms, it dropped by 71%.
And yet, when you spoke about the ruling and the fund that we were talking about earlier, the argument was it's not fair to direct money to a fund that benefits women and people of color.
Yeah. Yeah, part of this, like, the thing that is just completely lost by the Supreme Court is that we've got a history in this country of racism, of sexism, that means that we're not all starting at the same point.
Absolutely.
It may look like we're starting at the same point because we're all alive and we've all seen a Black president, for example, and a Black vice president.
What more do they want?
But at the same time, we are very far from a post-racial, a post-sexist society.
So far.
And these programs, they're just designed to give an equal, a more equal playing field. I always say when folks start talking about diversity, I always just say, look at the Olympics. Like, when you look at the Olympics, the entire world is represented.
Mm-hmm.
And there really is no country that's got a dominant, or certainly no race that's got a dominant hold on any given sport.
Right.
Because they've equally distributed the opportunity to succeed in the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that everybody has a shot.
Yeah.
You might have you might not have in your country all the right training facilities, right?
Mm-hmm.
You might not have, you know, all the right trainers, but at least you got an opportunity to compete.
Yep.
And look at how folks from countries all across the world you may never have heard of, Black folks from, we had a sprinter from France, a Black sprinter from France rise to the top. So I'm getting at is like, that shows you that talent is equally distributed, but opportunity is not.
Perfectly stated.
From my take, it's like, look, these things that were designed to help promote DEI, it's designed to just level the playing field. And that's been lost, but that's okay. Let's keep talking.
It's like the old expression, I keep showing my age, but, you know, I pull myself up by my bootstraps.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't have boots.
Yeah.
So, like, I can't pull myself up.
Word.
Because not only do I not have boots, I had boots and you took them from me.
Word.
Like, that's, you just, yeah.
Only 3% of businesses in America are owned by Black people. And they earn 1.1% of all business revenue.
We are consistently hovering around 1% on these stats.
Yeah. And despite these stats, I gave you the stat on who's managing the money, on who's getting the venture funding, on who owns the businesses and how much money those businesses are making. But here are some stats about how diverse companies do better. There's research that shows that companies in the top quartile for board gender diversity are 27% more likely to outperform financially than those in the bottom quartile. Additionally, companies in the top quartile for ethnic diversity are 13% more likely to outperform those in the bottom quartile. So, like, your gender and your ethnic diversity on boards really, really matters.
Yep.
I always give this example. There was this money management company called Fisher Investments. I don't know if you're familiar with Fisher Investments.
Yeah.
This is all public. I'm not throwing shade to just...
Their little one-liner? Is that where you're going?
No, Fisher Investments in 1 week lost over $1 billion of its assets under management because the CEO, Ken Fisher, got on, he was speaking at a conference and he said something sexist.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it with unchecked. Like, he just said it. People got word of what he said. And they voted with their feet. They moved their money out of Ken Fisher's firm.
Yep.
Because what you can tell about a CEO who gets in front of a stage of people and says something that is inappropriate.
Comfortably,
is that he doesn't have women in leadership at his company.
Right.
He's been talking crazy like that in his boardroom for years and he's been unchecked. So at a minimum, diversity is going to help you to not make those mistakes.
Yeah.
But I digress. Mm. Credit Suisse had a study of 3,000 companies in 56 countries. It shows that for firms that had more than 20% of their managers were women, their share prices rose more than the shares of companies that did not have women in their leadership.
Would you look at that?
20% higher performance by just having some women on the board.
It's good for business.
Women in management.
We know how to multitask. Not saying that men can't, but we do it well.
Boston Consulting Group found that companies with diverse management teams, including different ethnicities and genders, have 19% higher revenue that comes from innovation.
And that's the point in the business world that I think Bear's talking about. It's simply the fact that it's good for business.
Word.
So even if you're not into the, how should we call it? The, I don't want to say soft skills, but like the intangibles. This is business. This is good for business.
Yeah. That's a fact. Yeah, what's funny is like, when I talk about momentum advisors, I often start with two things. I show a picture, like when I'm doing a talk, I show a picture of our team.
You do.
And then I show a picture of our growth.
Mm-hmm.
We started out managing $26 million in our first year of business, and we're now managing over $350 million in a matter of 10, 11, 12 years, 12 mm-hmm. years.
That's incredible.
And that growth is because of that diversity.
Right.
And it's like we all came from firms that struggled with diversity. And mm-hmm. we used to be the ones doing all the diversity recruiting, right? Oh, doing all the initiatives, all the mentoring and all that. And yet we still never felt all that comfortable or like we belonged in those places.
Yep.
And so we could stay there fighting, trying to make them change.
Struggling.
Or we could start our own firms and kick the butts of those firms that are not diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, like, as much as I want this legislation to be undone that is canceling all the DEI stuff, I'm also like, if these companies and institutions don't want to be diverse, let them, and then y'all companies are going to fail.
Right. And we become, not become, we are the disruptors.
Yeah. We talked about companies performing better financially, stock prices doing better, more innovation. I mean, that's the result of more diversity.
Right.
And you could either see it or you don't see it. All right. So what do we do with all this, right? Like, I think that's the purpose of this conversation today.
Right.
Is that how do I make sure that my money says something about me that matches who I am as a person? So the first way that I would advise you to think about your money is how you're spending it. Like that's a no-brainer, right? Who are you spending your money with?
Yeah, we know about our consumption dollars, particularly in the Black community.
And the crazy thing about your consumption is that most of your money is already spoken for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who issued your mortgage? Who issued your car loan? Who's your insurance with? Like, by the time we get through those big major things, we've probably accounted for like easily 50% of your household budget.
Mm-hmm.
That means a small sliver of the spending that you can actually control and have some discretion with,
mm-hmm.
we've got to be really mindful as to how we spend that money.
Absolutely.
And by the way, there are Black banks out there that are doing mortgage loans and car loans that we could try to bank with.
Truth.
But at the same time, we got to just be mindful of what it says about us. So like, for example, we all know that Amazon makes life incredibly convenient.
Yep.
But do you want a world where you can only shop online for things that you want?
Right. Sometimes you need to touch and feel and see things.
Like,
or maybe you want to engage with the seller or the creator
yeah.
or the person who designed the product.
Word. So we're having this conversation about your money. It's a little different today.
Yep.
What does your money say about you? We know what the world is saying about you with regards to these DEI things, with regards to these laws that are designed to undo a lot of work from the civil rights movement and beyond. Now, what are you going to do about it in your portfolio, in your household budget? I'm Alan Boomer.
Andrea Gray.
And we are the Momentum Advisors.
Yes.
Another special episode.
They're all special. They're all special. Because I know that sound, it might sound a little corny, but they really are all special because we're not just pulling random things out of the air. We are sharing experiences. We're sharing sometimes safely our experiences in dealing with clients, family, friends. We're being a little vulnerable and sharing some things about ourselves in the process. And that makes it all special because we're special.
Was there a time in corporate America, and I won't name the company, was there a time in corporate America where you did not feel seen, that you did not feel like you belonged?
Countless. Every employer, multiple examples I could give.
Give me one.
Let's see. So I'm trying, some of the more recent ones stick out for sure. We had a guest speaker at one of the firms, and this woman was talking about, I think had been an Olympian. She was a former athlete. Mm-hmm. And there was all this pride in talking about what it means to represent the country in an Olympics. Mm-hmm. And I take that back. She was not an Olympian, but she used an example of an Olympic swimmer, I think.
Okay.
At the end of the day, in her example, she made a comment, or no, another advisor made a comment and said, oh, I bet she didn't take a knee. Mm. And mostly microaggression. And I'm sitting there like, so we going to do this only white people are patriotic thing? When I'm the daughter of a veteran who served proudly in a military that didn't see him. Mm. And so I wanted so badly to comment, but I was so in my feelings that I knew there was no safe way to point that out. But I was just kind of like, so we're getting this whole, this is of course around the whole Colin Kaepernick time frame. And I'm just like, but did you explore this enough to know that Colin Kaepernick actually conferred with his teammate, who was a veteran, to say, I want to protest the injustices that I see, mm-hmm. but I don't want to disrespect the country or our military.
Yeah.
And it was his own teammate, who was a veteran, who said, taking a knee is respectful. And so the narrative that was created was that people who were protesting or taking a knee when the national anthem was coming were not patriotic.
Yeah.
And they therefore shouldn't be here. And I'm thinking to myself, all y'all in here ain't nary one of y'all served ever.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing?
Yeah.
That was less about me. That was just a moment.
Yeah.
And
we've all experienced it. I was at an investment conference 2 years ago. And the topic was on innovation on this one presentation. And they were using examples of inventions that have caused production to go up, productivity to go up.
Mm.
Would you believe that 2 years ago, I had to just walk out. Like, I actually didn't
feel like this was more recent than that. I think I know this story.
I didn't even check them on it. One of the examples he used was cotton production from the 1700s to the 1900s. And he's talking about the cotton gin being this thing that ramped up cotton production. I'm like, bruh, you're not going to mention the slaves that was actually picking the cotton to go into the cotton gin?
Right.
Like, that is so culturally unaware to not even think, to just look at charts and not know the story behind those numbers. So what I'm getting at is, like, there is race behind all of this stuff. When we think about wealth in this country and you look at the wealth disparity between black and white folks, I mean, there's racism behind it. Like, you don't think that we're impacted by the fact that we couldn't buy homes and get federally backed mortgages until probably 50, 60 years ago? You don't think that had an impact on our wealth today?
And redlining, some of the government programs, things like the GI Bill that helped literally build the middle class because it paid for soldiers to be able to get an education, but we weren't afforded that opportunity.
So this DEI thing is like, you could tell this has really touched a nerve with us. But again, we're talking about what we can do about it today. So spending, you know, think about where you're shopping. Think about women-owned businesses, Black-owned businesses, Latin-owned businesses. These are ways to make your money match your mission.
For sure. And it goes further than that, of course. Think about our philanthropic efforts, the charities we support, all the places we spend money. Sometimes we don't think about philanthropy as spending money, but we have choices over our discretionary income.
Absolutely.
And where they go. So is it only the large, big name charities that may or may not benefit our communities or may or may not have decisions made by people in leadership who look like us, who will consider our perspectives? I mean,
yeah. Or are there some local charities making a big difference in your local city or town?
Yep.
Are there charities that really impact people of color? Are there charities that are doing great work in diversity? As all this stuff is happening, like, we don't know where companies are going to land. Like, I heard a CEO of a bank a couple weeks ago basically say at the Twigo Gala, we're big supporters of the Twigo Foundation, which is helping to diversify financial services.
Shout out to the Twigo Foundation, by the way.
This CEO said, yeah, I know y'all say there's a war on diversity, but in our company, we still care about it.
Yeah.
Right. And by the way, this Supreme Court ruling hasn't yet impacted private companies.
Mm-hmm.
It's impacted public universities. It's impacted this charity that's making grants, which it's not a done deal yet. Like, basically, the court said you should stop until this next set of court cases happens because we think this is going to be the outcome, but the outcome isn't here yet. But at the same time, we don't know where a company's going to land, but we do know that you've got control over where your money lands.
Real talk.
So next, we'll just go to how you invest.
I like this one a lot because it is one of the, besides our own diversity in our company, the people that make up Momentum Advisors, this is one of those overlooked areas when we start to talk about how our money is invested and who we invest our money with.
These are questions that you should ask your financial advisor if you don't know the answer. And I bet money you don't know the answer right now.
I would even bet money they don't know the answer.
Word. This is one of those times to ask the question and then be quiet and let them fumble through the answer. Let them do the research. What percentage of your money is managed by Black portfolio managers? Pause. Full stop.
It would be a long pause.
What percentage of my money is managed by firms that are owned by Black folks or people of color?
Another long pause.
What percentage of my portfolio is managed by women that has women on the portfolio management team?
Might be a shorter pause, but there will be a pause.
And the same thing for women-owned firms.
Mm-hmm.
What percentage of my money is managed by women-owned firms? And then go down the line, Latin, Asian, people of color.
You can tell a lot about a person or a group of people or a team by how they respond to something. Even if they're accurate, it's the comeback. If the comeback is, well, why is that important? Totally missed the mark. Or, who cares as long as you're getting, you know, stellar returns or you're beating the benchmark? Like, I believe some people's reactions, because they feel like they're caught off guard or being called out, instead of responding and being honest and saying, you know, I don't know, I think they would challenge the question and almost make you feel like, talk about not feeling seen or heard. I think the comeback might be more of a, well, why is that important? Or who cares?
Because I believe that it matters. Because you work for me. Because I'm paying you.
Yep.
Because I think it will make a difference on how I feel about my money.
Yep.
Because I think it will actually help me to make more money over time. Like, I actually believe that. Like, we did a little analysis this morning on our team call, and we looked at some of these investments that are designed to benefit from companies that have a good track record in the Black community. Some of them were our best performing investments.
Yeah.
it's not a mistake. Like, DEI is not charity. Like,
right.
DEI is actually great business strategy.
We've talked about those numbers. Those statistics are rooted in truth.
When I look at momentum and why we've been able to really outgrow so many financial advisory firms, it's because of our diversity. It's because we have a team of people who've been systematically overlooked by the financial services industry.
Word. I can, full stop, I can tell you that's why I'm here. Because I know you asked me earlier, had I ever, you know, in my previous employment, felt unseen? I was in a situation where I was growing on referrals only. I wasn't even, that sounds crazy, and it may sound like a flex statement, but I was at a place during the pandemic where my business was growing on referrals. COVID scared the hell out of a lot of people.
Yeah.
We saw what happened in the markets in those early months of the literally global shutdown, right? And so people were like, who do you work with? Who makes you feel comfortable? Who explains the things about your portfolio or your investments or your financial plan that make you feel safe, reassured, provide some education? So the word was out there. You need to talk to my girl, Andrea.
Yeah.
But the firm I was working for was like, well, you're doing a great job, but you're not doing it our way. Mm. So because you're not doing it our way, we want you to change what you're doing. And I'm kind of like, but if it's working, like, why isn't that not good enough? So then I started getting written evaluations that was saying, Andrea's not doing enough of this. Andrea's not doing enough of that. And so when it came to meeting whatever performance goals that they decided for me, if I was narrowly missing it, even though I was doing better than everybody else in my peer group, then it was, they would fall back on, yeah, the reason why you missed it is because you didn't do what we told you to do. And I'm like, but the reason why I'm doing better than everybody else when everyone else is not growing at all is because of what I am doing. So you want to focus on what I'm not doing and you're not seeing what I am doing.
Word.
Then it got better. Then they came back and I guess they realized they weren't going to win that argument. So then it was like, you're doing such a great job. Mm. We want you to come to this virtual event and explain to these other ones how you're doing what you're doing. I'm like, hilarious. Wait, first it's a problem.
Yeah.
Now you want me to share all my secrets with somebody else who you're going to give the other opportunities to when I'm not looking?
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Hey. I'm stressed out.
I love it. I'll tell you, I kept tabs on you, Andrea, and the moment I saw a little crack in your happiness, I was like, hey, come over to Death Row.
I was thoroughly unhappy. Just because of the nerve, the gall with which they came back and were like, nah, you got to do it this way. So, oh, can you tell other people how to do it your way?
Yeah.
No, not doing it.
Talent anyway. Overlooked, talent mismanaged. Right?
Yeah.
And what I love about our team, like our clients are not all Black folks. Like our clients are very diverse and they like our ability to connect with them, not because of how we look or what we look like. It's our skill set. And I'm telling you, like the financial services industry is missing out on skill sets by not being diverse. And shame on them. So going back to those questions that we asked, what percentage of your money is managed by Black folks, et cetera. We had a client that came to us and said, diversity is really important to me. Our goal is that we can get somewhere between 10 and 20% of our portfolio in the hands of minority-owned firms and diverse teams, et cetera. We came back to them with a portfolio that was 71% managed by diverse teams. There was diverse management in literally every aspect of their portfolio. And not only 71% with diverse teams, additionally 47% of the portfolio managed by firms that were owned by people of color and by women.
Yeah.
And each of these firms, each of these investment funds and every manager in that portfolio in the top 25% for performance.
Yeah.
So we did not skimp on performance.
Right.
In fact, you could argue that by looking at diversity, knowing all the stats on diversity, we put ourselves in a better position to find better performing investments.
Absolutely. And if we're honest, and we always aim to be, there was a time where if a client asked for we call it ESG, which is environmental, social, and governance. Mm-hmm. And there was a time in the markets where sometimes you felt like, or you experienced, that you had to choose performance or a cause. Mm-hmm. That time is behind us.
Word.
Both can be true at the same time. You can align your portfolio to your mission, your values, your causes that are most important to you, and still get stellar performance, if not outperform some of the things that don't meet that criteria.
If you're investing in companies that are doing good in the world, you don't think that's going to help you make more money?
Exactly. And there's a return on that too that can't be measured, but besides that, it can all be measured. And I'm so proud of how far we've come with that.
Or if I could say what I said differently, if you're investing in companies that are helping the world, do you think you're going to lose money by doing that?
Right.
So going back to expressing yourself, one of the things that I'm proud of, and this is not for every single client, but for clients that have a little bit more to invest, we have the ability to build customized portfolios that track an index. An index is a group of stocks, but also is customized around their specific values. Not just buying a fund that says we're doing X, Y, or Z, but really to pinpoint things that matter to that particular client.
Right.
And we can say, we're going to help you to get to your retirement goal. We're going to help you build the wealth you're looking to build for your family. But we're also going to do it in a way that matches who you are as a person. And like some of these things that we can build portfolios around, animal welfare, clean water, diversity, equity, and inclusion, education. A lot of people believe in education.
Mm-hmm.
Health and wellness. We have clients that are health organizations.
Yep.
We have clients in the pharmaceutical and healthcare industry. Human rights, immigration rights, LGBTQ plus justice, pollution, poverty, racial justice, women's right and workers' treatment. I mean, it's a longer list, but I'm saying right. Like just about anything you care about, we can build a portfolio around it.
Yes.
We can exclude the prison industrial complex.
Yep.
We can exclude gun manufacturers. We can direct money towards companies that support Democratic candidates with regards to their corporate giving.
Mm-hmm.
We can build custom portfolios. Like all this stuff is accessible today. That matches your money with your mission. To Andrea's point, puts your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, and your heart too.
Without giving up any returns.
That's right.
At all.
Yeah, it's, I'm curious, Alan Boomer.
Okay.
How do you approach this or frame this for the skeptic that still is stuck in that old historical narrative that says you can't invest in a socially responsible way and have great performance?
I think that today there is empirical evidence that you can put the index next to one of these socially responsible vehicles.
Yeah.
Next to a customized bespoke vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Next to an active manager that specifically is looking to make an impact with their investments. You can put all these things next to each other and let the numbers answer the question.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I fully expected you to say that. Yeah, so I knew the answer. But
the issue is there's so many folks that just assume that the numbers are going to be bad.
Right.
Like there's an argument that says, well, if you take the investment universe and you start to restrict it, mm-hmm. how can you expect to do better than the investment universe?
Right.
It's the same thing of picking. Like when you're picking a favorite team, a favorite player, right?
Yep.
You're picking. You're saying, I want this one and not that one.
Right.
Because I think this one's going to do better.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you add your values to it, I think it's going to help you to do better.
Right.
And that's the argument.
Yeah. So I asked that question. I knew what your answer was going to be because we worked together. So I knew how that was going to play out. So remember, I'm churchy.
Mm-hmm.
Your description.
Yes.
For the skeptics, I introduce it almost like the concept of tithing. I'm like, well, let's just start with 10% of your portfolio.
Yeah.
And so at least you'll know that you're doing good with 10% of your portfolio. And let's just see how it plays out. And then, as you're saying, once they see, oh my gosh, this is outperforming everything else, let's get some more. And I'm like, we could have had some more earlier and you could have had even better returns. But you know what I mean? Like sometimes you do have to sort of spoon feed people because there are skeptics out there.
Yeah. You know what's so funny? Like we have an investment committee that picks the investments that go into our portfolio. Mm-hmm. One of the things we look at is diversity. It's not the only thing we look at. We look at performance and, you know, compared to the peers and a bunch of other quantitative statistics. But even for the clients that don't care about diversity, mm-hmm. they've got diverse money managers in their portfolios.
Yeah.
And their portfolios are doing great.
Yep.
And so it really is one of those things that it's a factor. It's not the only factor.
Sure.
But like, it's not hurting in any way.
In any way. In any way. It's only hurting a hater.
Yeah. And there's a lot of haters out there and their feet are sore right now. So let's go to break and we'll come back. We'll keep this conversation going. I'm Alan Boomer.
Andrea Gray.
And we are the Momentum Advisors. It's the pathway to freedom that's leading to the North Star.
Thank you so much for listening to the Momentum Advisors Show. This is Sean King, founder and CEO of the North Star. If you want to hear more shows like this, featuring black and brown voices on the most important issues of the day, head over right now to thenorthstar.com to discover all the podcasts we have to offer. We have over 500 different episodes from 6 different podcast series, and they're all great. Check them out.
So we're back. We're having a conversation about putting your money where your mouth is in this battle against DEI.
Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you a time I was racially profiled and I was so mad about it?
Let's hear it.
So I'm all suited up. I'm feeling good. I'm headed to an investment meeting and it's like in this building in New York City and I'm feeling great.
Hold on. I might have some bias here because when you said suited up, because we talk about sports so much, I'm like, basketball?
You thought I was wearing.
It's a shame. I'm talking to my own colleague, the founding partner of this firm.
An actual suit and tie
like
on.
Like a business suit.
A business suit. And
shame on me.
I was rushing, so I didn't get a chance to like look at the floor. Like, so I get to security and I'm like, hey. And he's like, oh, yeah, you got to go to the 23rd floor. I'm like, cool. Thank you so much. He lets me through. I get up there. I get to the 23rd floor. It's an employment agency. Not my meeting. This is where people that are unemployed go to try to get help with getting a job.
He assumed you were going
because
there.
I'm black in a suit that I'm going to the employment agency. So I rush back down to that desk. Like,
is he black? Because we have biases, too, against our own people.
He definitely was a person of color. Yeah. And I was ready to give him a mouthful. I got back downstairs. He was gone. Somebody else directed me to the right floor, which is like the 30th floor. And do you ever get profiled? Like, you walk into a place, and you're like, oh, this way. I'm always like, oh, because I'm black?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's not always racial, but, like, I'm often, if I'm shopping in a department store, I'm usually thought to be an employee.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that may be less about race and more about I look like I know what I'm doing. Yeah. I don't know. But the thing is, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the part. I've been with my husband is a bit of a he is a snazzy dresser.
Okay.
Let's just say
he
that.
Is.
So there was a time when I'm not gonna name the store, Brooks Brothers. and he was looking at cufflinks. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it was a big deal to have these silk knots.
Yeah.
So he's looking through the little bin of different silk knots because he's looking for something specific. And they come over and they go, you know those are cufflinks, right?
Like,
I was like, if you could die from a look, that was it. We walked out. Because he's just like, first of all, I'm dressed like I shop here.
Yeah.
And then you're just going to assume. But then, of course, rational me is like, well, maybe they thought, because he does look young and we were younger then. I'm like, maybe they thought you were just too young to know. He was just like, it's just like we talked about the sister tax.
Yeah.
It's just, it's an added tax. And you don't, sometimes you're like, was I just profiled? I'm not sure.
Yo, my brother walked into Short Hills Mall one time, him and his wife.
We naming all the places.
Yeah,
today.
This happened. He walked in, my brother, who happens to be an African-American man, walks into Short Hills Mall, and security stops him at the door and says, "Hey, just so you know, there's no food court in here."
Yikes.
And we don't, and we don't have any cell phone stores.
Who does that?
What? My brother was hot. He still went in, you know what I'm saying? But like, yo, I mean, it probably was a black person that did it.
That's my point. Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes that's what it is. You know what's crazy?
Like, I travel, like, I look like a hoodlum, I'm sure. I wear sweatpants, I wear hoodies. It's funny, like, when a black person wears the same outfit as a white tech executive.
For sure.
We get looked at like we are a rapper, and they get looked at like they're Mark Zuckerberg's, you know, number two in command.
Because who have all the tech executives been?
Yeah.
They weren't white folks. They didn't look like Alan Boomer. Yeah. So that's their point of reference.
So we're having a DEI conversation.
Yeah.
We're trying to lighten the mood a little bit. We're a little too serious today. Yeah. We like to have a good time.
Yep.
You know, it's crazy, though, that you feel this sense of dignity from just getting regular treatment in a store.
Yeah, which makes me not want to go to them.
Yeah, one of my homegirls, she wrote a book. It's called Negotiating While Black. And she's a master negotiator. She went to law school for negotiation. She was at a law firm. Like, her job was to negotiate multinational contracts, et cetera. And in her book, she tells a story of walking into a car dealership armed with all that she knows about negotiating. And one of the first things it says is to push back on the first offer.
Mm-hmm.
So they take the test drive, and the price was too high. She says, "No, I'm not going to be able to meet that price." And the salesman says, "Okay, you can leave."
Mm.
And she's like, this goes against every bit of
sales training ever.
Yeah, like negotiation, like there's supposed to be a back and forth.
Right.
But this person was willing to leave the negotiation table because that salesperson presumed that you don't have the money to buy the car. Not that we're supposed to be going back and forth with this. Like, a salesperson's there to make money.
Yeah. Yeah,
you could call it lazy. It's also sexist.
Of course.
And racist.
All of the things.
Like, the issue is that we've got to realize that this issue of racism and sexism, it pervades all of this stuff.
All of it.
And we're constantly fighting it.
All the time. So it's so taxing.
Let's get back to our portfolio. We talked about these things that we can do. I want to brag on a couple of investments that we've made that I feel really, really good about.
I like them.
I'm not saying you should go out and invest in them, but look into them. Talk to your financial advisor about this. Don't, like when I said ask the question, like what percentage of my money, blah, 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 like you don't have to then tell them what to buy. Like, you want them to figure some of this stuff out.
Do the work.
But the first one is a company called the Adesina Social Justice All Cap Global Index Fund. I know that's a mouthful, but the firm is called Adesina. The firm was founded by a brilliant queer black woman who is so smart.
Yeah.
And the whole purpose of this firm is social justice with regards to mobilizing investors to drive impact through how they're investing.
Yeah.
This is an ETF. This is a fund that anybody could buy with a brokerage account or an IRA account. But this fund is built on four pillars. The first pillar is racial justice. Within that pillar, it's prison involvement, prison funding, prison labor, the money bail movement, immigrant detention, indigenous people's rights, DEI, and also voting rights, all baked into this fund. That's the racial justice pillar. Then there's a gender justice pillar.
Mm-hmm.
And that one is all about LGBTQ equality, sexual harassment, reproductive rights for women, and LGBTQ employment opportunities.
Board representation as well.
Yeah. And then the last two were economic justice, which really speaks to minimum wage for employees, forced labor and child labor, predatory lending, and then finally climate justice. And the beautiful thing about Adesina and their research, I mean, for one, they've done a great job of partnering with nonprofit organizations that do the work of researching companies and which companies are offending which groups by doing which things. They also advocate by coming up with policies that they get sign-off on from public companies, from investment managers, from financial firms like us, They do their proxy voting, meaning like there's a chance for shareholders to vote and they vote in favor of things that advance their causes. But they also have identified the fact that a lot of pollution happens in Black communities.
Yeah.
And the founder, her name is Rachel Robichaudi. She came from one of these communities that was constantly getting dumped on with pollution and she wanted to do something about it.
Love it.
It's a great fund. It's done well for investors. Again, not saying that you should go out and buy it, but you should look into it.
Yeah. I love even better, and it has nothing to do with performance or the causes, but I love when these funds have like cool tickers.
JSTC.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Anyway.
Others. Next was a company called Impact Shares. Impact Shares is a nonprofit organization that's created these vehicles to promote the values of certain nonprofit organizations while also being a fundraiser for those organizations themselves.
Yes.
And the first fund that I'll talk about with theirs is the NAACP Minority Empowerment Fund. And this is a fund that was designed in conjunction with the NAACP. It was designed to give you broad stock market exposure, but with a lens towards racial justice and equality. So they worked with the NAACP to come up with an index that would focus on companies that really have a good track record in the Black community.
Love it. Also cool ticker, NACP.
Easy to remember.
Yep.
And so it's a fundraiser for the NAACP, and it's impacting a lot of areas that you care about. Board diversity, discrimination policies, diversity programs.
Yep. And this organization has other investment vehicles, other ETFs that primarily support other causes around, you know, representation as it relates to women, real estate investing, and real estate opportunities that benefit the black and brown communities. I think there's another one related to water and clean water initiatives. So a lot of opportunities within one fund that supports multiple causes.
And then you brought up the next one, women, the Women Fund, the Women Empowerment Index Fund. The ticker is WOMN.
Yep. That's cool. I mean, you know, it's cool.
Yeah, this one is in conjunction with the YWCA, the Young Women's Christian Association. And it's raising money for the YWCA while also creating investments that eliminate racism, empower women, and promote peace and justice. So we had a long conversation today, another serious one. We apologize for not being light and lively.
We got to give the people what they want, though. They want this information, right?
And gender justice matters. Racial justice matters. Equality matters. And if your politicians can't get it right, if the Supreme Court can't get it right, maybe you can in your portfolio, in your household.
It's a tough job, but someone's got to do it.
So keep listening. We are going to keep talking our stuff.
We're going to keep talking our stuff.
And we hope to see you back next week or hear you back next week. I'm Alan Boomer.
Andrea Gray.
And we are the Momentum Advisors. Momentum.